You know, there was a moment for me, I think when I moved to the Bay Area, I said that I was going to follow my dreams, even when you don't know what your dreams are.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, I just knew that there was something bigger for me. And it was like my intuition telling me, you know.
Have you ever found yourself desperately wanting something greater in your life and yet not knowing what that is? I know I have. Well, this is exactly what our guest, Alejandra Ayala, went through, but unlike many others, she decided to look for that something and connect with those who would help her become a Latina pioneer in the area of diversity in tech. In today's episode, we talk about daring to achieve with Alejandra Ayala of Puente Tech. This is Inno Latino.
Hola mi gente, welcome my people. Welcome to another episode of Inno Latino. Today we have a very special guest, a pioneer, a Latina pioneer in the tech world in the Western United States. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Alejandra Ayala. Bienvenida, Alejandra.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. I'm very excited.
Same here, Alejandra. Alejandra has a very impressive background. She's worked with Culture Force, Adobe, and this little company that you might have heard of called Google. And also she's the co-founder of an organization called Puente Tech, which is, I'll let her tell us about the story of Puente Tech. But first, Alejandra, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, please.
Yes, thank you for that great introduction. I'm like, wow, I'm impressive.
You are impressive.
Yeah, so I'm Alejandra. It's nice to meet you all and thank you for listening. I'm originally from Southern California. I actually grew up, I was born and raised in Santa Ana, California. I am Mexican. I'm first generation Mexican American here in the United States. And my parents are both from Michoacán, Mexico.
Awesome.
And so I grew up in pretty humble beginnings. You know, my mother has been a housekeeper for over 30 years and my father just retired as a janitor. Wow. And so I grew up with a really, really good example of what an excellent work ethic is. My parents never miss work. And that's what they taught us. You know, they didn't focus, I think, a lot on education. They didn't focus a lot on like, oh, I want you to get developed. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. But what they did teach me every day is that everyone works and that it's important that we all contribute in our own way. So
excellent. And a great example of our values as Latinos, you know, hard work is going to get us there, a better place always. And that's why your parents made that big decision of leaving Mexico, huh?
Exactly. You know, as of recently, I even started asking them about their experience. I'm like, what was it like coming here? Like, what did you do here first? I recently found out that my mom's first job was actually picking strawberries in the Gilroy area. Wow. I had no idea until I was 30 years old that this is how my mom started here in this country, you know? Wow. So that's a little bit about my parents. I have three brothers and I have a sister. Wow. So I also grew up in a big family, rowdy at the house, and I loved it. But let me see. After a little bit about like my education, is that I only graduated high school. I actually am not a college graduate. Mm-hmm. And just today I enrolled back into community college because I was like,
today?
Just today.
Congratulations.
just before this, I was like sending my transcripts. But I graduated high school in Santa Ana and then actually didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. You know,
really?
I had no idea. I only wanted to be on the radio. I actually picked like a career that was not traditional. And my parents were like, what? You need to get a job, Alejandra. Stop playing around. You're like, you need to go work.
Come on, mija. Vámonos.
Like, that's not a real job. Like, you go work on a computer, be a secretary, they used to tell me. And I'd be like, you're crazy. That's the last thing I want to do, right? But time went on, and I was a waitress for a long time, maybe 5 years. And then I made the transition to hospitality. I ended up at the Walt Disney Company. I come from Disney. That's where I really was taught to be a leader of people there first. Wow. It's the first company that my managers were like, hey, you're onto something here. I think you should be leading this, or I think you should be doing that. And it was a point in my life where I kept telling them, like, look, I don't think I'm the person for this. I don't know how to do this. I don't know. I didn't finish school. I don't know. And they're like, you do know. You're going to figure it out here. You're going to learn.
Great.
And I was like, all right, well, I'll take it. So then I quickly went up the ranks, and I ended up training and developing a lot of the cast members at the Disneyland Resort hotels for the Disneyland Hotel and the Grand Californian Hotel and Spa. And they really taught me how to inspire and lead people. And my leaders, I mean, to this day, they're some of the most amazing managers I ever had, because they really believed in me when I just didn't even have a drop of confidence, a drop of like, I can really do this.
Wow.
Yeah, in my early 20s, I was like so lost. I was like, I don't know what I'm good at. I don't know if I'm good at anything. So years went by, and I started doing transformational work. I actually started doing a lot of self-development work, and I did a course that totally changed my life. And then I was like, you know what? I don't want to work at Disney anymore. And I quit my job and I moved to the Bay Area. And then I was like, I'm going to be on the radio. I had met someone that let me be on his radio show. I became a producer for him, like as an intern. I would drive up to Santa Rosa, which is like 70 miles north of the Bay Area, to be on the radio for 2 hours on a Wednesday afternoon.
Wow.
Like barely anybody listened, right? It was like the tiniest radio station, but I love that station. I still love it. It's KBBF in the Santa Rosa area. And
is that right?
Yeah. And I love it. I love being in the booth. I love producing. I love making things happen and planning things out. I don't necessarily like being on air all the time, surprisingly, but
wow.
You're
a natural. I mean, I'm so surprised.
Right? I get a little shy, believe it or not.
Sorry to believe.
So when I moved out to the Bay Area, I was like, okay, I love the radio, but I really need to get a job. Like, I got to pay bills. So expensive in the Bay Area. So I went to do what I usually did, and I worked at a hotel. I was at a Marriott for a few years managing corporate events. And I was like, dude, if I got to manage one more corporate event, I'm just going to retire right now. Like, that's it for me. And so I quit. And then I was like, I'm going to go to tech and I'm going to do the thing there. So I wanted to be in HR. I wanted to be in recruiting, because I knew that recruiting and HR were at the front lines of who gets hired at companies. Like, if you want to know how these people got there, you have to learn about HR. You have to go through HR. And I was really, really curious as to like, how do you select people? Because if you're looking at some of the people I worked with, I was like, how did you even get here? Like, I'm like shocked. I'm like, who's making these choices, right? So I started working backwards, and I was like, who makes the choices and how do you make the choices? So After Marriott, I went to Culture Force, which was a tiny startup at the time. It actually didn't live anywhere past 2 years, and it doesn't exist anymore. But I was an event manager, but I was focused more on team culture. I was focused on team bonding. I was focused on rebuilding teams with camaraderie and making everybody feel great at the place where they worked.
Excellent.
So I was like, that's cool, right?
Yeah.
And then they didn't have money to pay me. And I was like,
oh, what, startups not being able to pay the new employees? I don't know what you're talking about.
I know, right? I was like, damn it, like, come on. And I had left a really stable job, you know, at Marriott. I was in an employee union, right? I could have never gotten fired. I was like, I gotta stay there forever, but it's not what I wanted. So I remember like being at the startup and being like, oh my God, what am I gonna do for money? You know, they were falling behind on paying me, but my rent was like still due. I was like, this is all bad for me. And after that, I ended up getting picked up by Adobe as a recruiting coordinator. And that was my first high-tech job, and it was a contract. And the person who found me online and who screened me, who interviewed me, is actually a Latina herself and probably one of the only ones in the department. Her name's Isa. And I remember meeting her, and she was like, oh, you have a non-traditional background, but I'd really love to meet you. And I was like, of course, right? I moved whatever I had planned.
Yes.
I got on the phone with her and I was like, look, I've never worked at a high-tech startup company before. But this is what I know how to do. I've led teams of 75, you know, I've done all X, Y, and Z. And she was like, I'll give you a shot. I think you're great. I think that you can learn whatever there is to learn. And I was like, cool. So I started working at Adobe, and it was one of the hardest jobs for me.
Really? How come?
You know, the speed in which technology companies move is insane. You know, I was used to Disney, and Disney moves at the speed of the government, you know, like if they want to place like a new process, or they want to do this or want to do that, you can take more time. But in tech, they're just not working that way. Mm. You know, they're just like, look, this is a new policy, implement it in your job right now. And, you know, you go to one 45-minute training and you're expected to apply it to your job right away.
Immediately. Wow.
Yeah. And then like just learning the culture of tech companies, learning what's successful there, learning what's not successful there, learning what communication styles are, or learning how to develop relationships with people who are going to advocate for you, people who are going to sponsor you and train and develop you, even though they don't have to, you know, all of this stuff I just really was not aware of. And transitioning was like, it burned me out. I was like burnt out from like working so much, from trying to get everything right, from dealing with like imposter syndrome, from not feeling like you really fit in. And then you're a contractor at that. So you don't really get the benefits that the full-time employees do, right?
Been there? So, yeah, exactly.
Kind of navigating through all those spaces. And then I got recruited by Google. I work at through a staffing company as well. I'm still a contractor. It's my second year at Google. And it's been amazing going there. I was like, oh my God, it's like the Disneyland of companies. The way that, you know, the offices were amazing. I was like, oh, I'm going to go have a banana smoothie now. And then you can go have a latte and then have like a bagel and then go like take a nap somewhere and then go back to work, you know?
Wow.
So I had never been to offices that were so decked out, and I loved it. The resources available to us, the technology built, everything's custom made there, right? So
yes,
I was like, this is so cool, because you can literally have an idea and like there's already a team working on it to pilot, to see if it works, to see if that's anything they're interested in. I was like, man, the possibilities here are endless. Wow. But yeah, that's kind of how my career went. And it was all done through like, I'm just going to take a chance, you know, I'm just going to see if it works. And I really can't believe that I made it this far without a college degree, you know, working at these companies. So I work with really fancy people, you know, but it's possible. And that's my story of how I navigated through that.
Thank you, Alejandra. You know, what fascinates me about your story is that you took several times a step into the unknown. That takes a lot of guts, a lot of faith, you know, because I'd be in the situation where I have a stable job, but I am miserable, you know, at the same time. And, you know, I'm going to say the old school, but I'm not trying to tell people they're old, but the way I was raised is, you know, especially when your family, and in my case, myself, comes from the third world, you try to latch onto whatever safety, whatever stability you can get in your life, you know, because the opportunities aren't there, or as abundantly as the United States, you know. And your example tells me that, wow, it is you can take risks. You can walk by faith into the darkness, if you will, and still have great results. I don't know. Is that do you identify with that as well?
I do identify with risks and failure. I developed a different relationship with that. I refuse to settle is how I grew up, you know, and I'm pretty stubborn. So like when my family was like, you can't do that. You know, you're not going to go to Bay Area and get a job and then get money and then live. And I'm like, yes, I can. And so a lot of it was my family, like especially my father, who he's old school. You know, he's an old school Michoacano. He's like, you should have had kids years ago. What are you doing? Like, what are you doing starting a business? Like, you're supposed to be raising kids by now. So he was my main like motivator, even if he didn't know it at the time. You know, he would tell me I can do it, and then I'd be like, yes, I can. So now I gotta go show you. I was very stubborn. I was always like, I was always head to head with my dad, because I refused to fit into his expectations of what a woman is. I was like, you grew up in Mexico and it was a different generation, and I'm not going to be held back by anyone, and I love you to death, and you're always going to be in my life, you know. So we had to work on our relationship over the years, but over the past 5 years that I've been in the Bay Area, it's been the most challenging for me and the most rewarding. So failure and risk, yes.
Interesting. So I like it that you're very realistic. So it's sometimes going to take a lot of negotiating, even with the people you love, the people that want the best for you, and they simply are judging by their previous experience. And they have their opinion about what's best for you, and yet you have a different vision for your life, because as you're right, that's who you are. And also the fact that failure is part of the equation. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about a leadership program that I did that taught me all about failure. So I did this leadership program that is literally designed for you to fail every step of the way for 7 months.
Oh my gosh.
To learn how to deal with that, how to deal with no's. So I did this program not really knowing that that was the intention. I was just like trying to get a promotion. I was like, maybe if I do this program, I'm going to get a promotion. I don't know. So I enrolled in the program. And the program, and it was so challenging, and it questions your identity over and over and over and over and over again.
Wow. So how? Now I'm curious. It questions your identity. How?
It confronts your identity. Like, my identity at the time was being really good at work. I was really, really good at work. So my identity was around my success at work. And if I wasn't successful there, then my value was just really, really low, right, to myself.
Yes.
So when I did that program, I got the startup stopped paying me. And then I was unemployed for like 2 months. So during that program, I kept having no's. I kept interviewing people saying no. Some of the assignments were like, build a team and do this project. And I kept getting no's. Some of the assignments were like, get a group together of your closest friends and family and do X, Y, and Z. And they would still tell me no. So it was like, what about me is calling for no's? And I had to sit with it and had to deal with people's no's, and I had to deal with their criticism and not react and learn to communicate without reacting and taking it personal. So then when I finished the program, I was like, man, I think no's are a blessing. I think no's are like a way that I'm going to figure out the answer. Oh, wow. So, you know, a year later, I'm looking for a different job. When I was interviewing for Google, I interviewed at over 15 companies, and most of them told me no, until Google and one other company said yes. So for me, failure is like, it means I'm doing something. It means I'm challenging myself. It means I'm trying something bigger than myself. So I'm proud of my failures, because I used to not try things because I was scared, and it caused a lot of anxiety for me. And the moment I was able to release it was a moment that I just no longer was afraid of failing.
And I commend you for that. You know, us dudes are very good at linking our value to our work, you know, or to our business. And that is simply not healthy, you know, especially in an economy like this, you know, and it is very easy, you can be very easily isolated from what's important in your life. So thank you for sharing that. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what made click there to start seeing no as something positive in your life, something that changed your vision? Because I know that that's going to help our listeners a lot.
Yes, that's a great question. You know, there was a moment for me, I think when I moved to the Bay Area, I said that I was going to follow my dreams, even when you don't know what your dreams are.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, I just knew that there was something bigger for me. And it was like my intuition telling me, you know, I used to have big dreams. I imagined my life being like this successful person. I imagined my life being very comfortable. I like nice things. I was like, I want to be a baller. You know, I grew up poor. I was like, I don't want to be poor anymore. I've already tried that, right?
It didn't work for me.
I was like broke all through my 20s. I was like, look, it's time for me to live nice. And I don't think that is going to happen in Santa Ana, California. So there was a moment when I had two bags and I moved to Oakland. That's the moment that I was like, look, you quit your job, you packed everything you owned in two bags and you moved to the Bay Area in a sublease for 2 months. Like, you have this much amount of time to make it happen, something. And then I started doing a lot of transformational work that really got me so clear on, I have a bigger purpose. I have a bigger purpose. And I didn't know what that was yet. And I started sharing with the people. I was like, what are you about? Because maybe I'm about that too. I didn't know.
Interesting.
I started meeting people that interested me. I started meeting people that were so intelligent. You know, I was in Oakland. So I was meeting Oakland, UC Berkeley students. I was meeting really people that were like highly educated, that knew exactly what they wanted to pursue, very successful people in the Bay Area. And I was like, I don't think that I fit in here, but I want to learn about you. You know, I want to learn like who you are and how you realize that that's what you wanted to do with your life.
So that desire helped you overcome that intimidation then?
Yeah. I mean, I was like, look, I gave everything up. I have nothing to lose. I came out here to give it my best shot, and I'm going to do that. There's a point where my dad was like, you're not doing well. Like, my anxiety was out of control. I was depressed. I was very, very isolated. I was single for 5 years and I only focused on work and development. And I was like, I'm burnt out and it's not working. And my dad was like, it's okay, and just move back home. And I was like, I rather sit through this than move back home. I told you I wasn't going to go back home. So it was moments like that, that snapped me back into reality, that kept me going, that had me go to all these programs and courses and education to get myself ready to handle more than I'd been able to handle at the time.
Don't go anywhere, folks. In our next segment, Alejandra tells us how she ventured into the unknown and obtained success in her career. This is Igno Latino.
So you being like an avid learner, am I right? You know that there's something out there that is going to make you a better person. It's going to help you increase your knowledge, you know. And I'm curious also about the relationships you've developed through the years. Here's the, and then please listeners, take this with a grain of salt, but remember that saying that dime con quien andas y te diré quien eres, tell me who you're with and I'll tell you who you are, kind of a thing. So I think that sometimes, especially when people like myself that come from third world countries, all we see is bad examples of leadership, mediocrity, poverty, you know, that's nobody's fault in a lot of times. We think that reality is that, and everyone is like that, and you are not going to be able to progress, to get at a different level. How is that you decided, like, I want to meet people who are brilliant, like, who are, I want to learn something from them. We're talking about people from Berkeley who, and unfortunately, I don't have the opportunity to meet regularly, you know? So what made you decide to start, sorry, I'm thinking in Spanish, relacionándote, like getting together with these type of people?
I wanted friends.
Really?
I had moved. I lost all my social circles. I'm a person that has always had really strong relationships and friends in my life. Like, I have friends for over 15 years already, you know, 20 years. And friends are very important to me. So when I moved to the Bay Area, I was like, bro, I don't know anybody. I can't even go, like, get a beer with someone. I don't, you know, where am I? I was only meeting people at work. And I worked at a hotel at the time. So I didn't really feel like I connected with people who were into what I wanted to learn.
Okay.
So here's what happened. I was like, I need to meet, like, powerful Latinos. Where are they at? Like, I know they gotta be here somewhere, right?
Uh-huh.
So I found this organization called the Latino Community Foundation in San Francisco. And they had an internship open. They had a program intern open. They wanted someone that was a fresh graduate. They wanted someone, blah, blah, blah. I didn't qualify at all.
Really?
I knew that I had a story, and I knew that I know logistics, and I knew that I know process. So I was like, look, you can use me for something. I was a corporate event manager at the time, and I knew that they had a big events coming up, like a gala, like a program accelerator they did. I knew they had events. So I was like, I knew that they could use me. So I applied anyway, and I wrote the best cover letter of my life. I was like, damn, I'm so proud of this. I want to print it and frame it. You know, I shared my story in such a quick and concise way that the program manager called me, and she's like, look, I was looking for something different, but you are fantastic, and I want to interview you. So I go interview her. Amazing, amazing, best interview. I get the internship, and I meet the team, Latino Community Foundation. If you look them up, you'll see a team of powerhouse Latinas that are just ruling the world from that office. Awesome. And I get in the room, the walls are literally red. There's like Latino stuff everywhere. The CEO is talking about social justice with someone on the phone. The VP is getting checks of $500,000 to help people in wildfire stuff. Like, and pregnant. I remember she was super pregnant. And like pitching to investors on the phone. And I was like,
wow.
You know, I come from a world where I didn't have a lot of Latina managers. I didn't have a lot of Latina mentors. I didn't have any mentors, you know? So I was amazed by them. I was like, wow, so much is possible. And they were so powerful, so assertive and confident. And I was like, I want to be like that. So I was open and I was honest. I was like, I'm here to learn. This is who I am. I don't know what I want to do after this. And I'm in my late 20s already, which interns are usually like 22, you know? And they loved it. I still have all my relationships with the team. We check in every once in a while, but after that, they introduced me to other people. I worked some of their events and met friends there. And then I met my main mentor that made a huge difference for me when I was a coordinator at Adobe, because he needed a connection and he was connected to someone at LCF. So I said yes to meeting him, and it was like the best thing I had ever done. So that's how I started building my relationships. And then I also started building relationships through online dating.
Okay. 21st century, baby.
So I would meet with these guys, like, we'd go on dates, but like, turns out that they're like UC Berkeley something, and then we don't end up dating, but we become friends. Like, there are people that, like, look, I don't want to go out with you again, but I want to be your friend, you know? I think you're awesome, and let's think together, or let's work together, or can you teach me about that, or what is that like? And that's kind of how I started developing relationships.
Wow, that's awesome. So it is possible to get on online dating sites and actually develop friendships, pure friendships then.
Absolutely. Like, I know someone for a few years now who I met through online dating, and we never ended up dating.
Interesting. Well, it is so fascinating because you didn't even know exactly what you were looking for, but you had that intuition, that desire, and you had this feeling that, well, I want to identify with something better. And you went ahead and put your best foot forward and got it. And it reminds me of a previous guest I had here, Graciela Tiscareño Sato. She said that we are used to the phrase si se puede, but now we need to move to cómo se puede, to how we were able to do that. And that's, I
I
mean,
love
you have that down. You said you wrote down the best cover letter to get in, which is exactly what we miss sometimes. Like, oh, I'm going to send an application and see what happens. No, you actually have to put a great effort into it, identify who's going to receive the letter or the email that you're going to send, and make your case the best possible way. So if I understand correctly, that's exactly what you did, and you got it.
Yes, that's exactly. I took my shot. I was like, this is what I got, and I hope they see it.
Well, Alejandra, if it wasn't impressive already, all these things that you've accomplished, you founded also Puente Tech. Can you tell us a little bit about Puente Tech,
Oh my
please?
God, yes, please. I've been dying to tell you about
Yes.
So Puente Tech, we recently started Puente Tech. We're a recruiting and consulting company, and you know, the story of how Puente Tech got developed is pretty funny. I was, you know, my job at Google right now, I reject thousands of people a month. You know, rejection, rejection, rejection. I work with candidates to better position themselves to apply again. But most of the time, we're going to be rejecting people in the masses. And I was thinking, like, oh, like the first few months of that job was really hard for me because I was like, I'm a yes person. Damn. Like, I am just like rejecting people back to back to back to back. And it does something to you when people are trying to get time with you. They're like, just give me a chance. Like, and I'm like, you don't get it. You're exceptional and you're not ready for it for this level, right? So I started thinking, like, what do we do with all this talent? What do we do with all this talent that isn't getting through big tech? You know, I'm reading through these resumes and I'm like, this is 10 years of solid, exceptional experience, and you're still not the best here. You know, you're still like average amongst a lot of piles of resumes, right? So I started meeting other people. I had my mentor Arturo. He started sending me people. He's like, oh, you're a recruiter now. Cool. I'm gonna send you people, and maybe you can, you know, they're looking for jobs. And I was like, cool. So I started meeting all kinds of people. They were all Latinas. I think I had a few men, but most of them were Latinas. And they were like, look, I don't work in tech and I want to work in tech. And I know that's what you did. You didn't work in tech and then you did work in tech. So how did
Oh boy,
you
no
do
pressure there.
that? Right? And I was like, oh man, how do they know? I'm like, now, you know, you start seeing that this is who you are. People will be like, what's up? Like, are you gonna tell me the secret? What's the secret sauce? And I was like, oh my God, like I failed a lot. I tried this, I tried that, you know, I moved away, I did whatever I had to do. And then I met this one woman, her name's Madel, and I was like, we're talking about the same thing. She was in social work, and then she went to go get two masters, and then she was trying to get into UX in tech, and she was having the hardest time. And then COVID hit. So
Oh
then
my
she was
gosh.
like,
Just to translate to our listeners, that's user interface design. That is the way that programs and technology interacts with human beings like you and I. Sorry.
thank you
Please
for that.
go ahead, Alejandra.
Yeah, so we were talking, and she's like, look, COVID hit. I'm like, it's been a dead zone over here for 10 months. It is the most discouraging job search ever because I just spent all this money, or like I just finished two masters and I still am not getting callbacks. Is it my resume? I look at a resume, I'm like, this is fine. It's not the resume, it's the opportunities, right? You don't have tech experience, so tech companies don't want to hire you, even if you went to school for it. You might have to go in through a fellowship or an internship or some type of pathway. And I was like, Madel, I don't know if I could do anything for you. However, wouldn't it be cool if we created a pathway for people to just like you, just like me, be able to be like, look, a pathway where we can showcase their transferable skills from different industries and show them what it would look like in tech. Sometimes people do X, Y, and Z at whatever company, and they don't know what it's called in tech. And it's called something different, but it's the same job. So I help people identify that. I'm like, oh, this is what it's called here. Maybe we can say it's this or that. So I kind of guide people through that. But Madel was like, look, I think it's a great idea. And we could develop it. And I was like, look, yeah, like give me a few weeks. I'll put together a plan. And can I meet with you in 2 weeks? I also identified that Madel had so many skills that I didn't have. Madel is like an exceptional person for like anything technical, anything creative, anything, any type of writing, exceptional writer. And look, those are not my strongest skills. And I know that. I was like, you would be a great partner to have. Our synergy is great. I was like, oh, I could work with you all the time. And she's super smart. So I was like, be my partner. I need you to make this happen. Will you say yes? I was like, not going to get on the off the phone until she gave me.
Persistent little thing.
Right? I had this one page presentation to show her of like the plan. It was like, now I look back at it and it like, it makes me laugh that that's what I showed her, because it was like literally like three little boxes with an arrow. <You
know>? Jumping from one box to the other. Oh, that's awesome.
She was like, oh, cool. But I sold her on me, you know, I really sold her on like how excited I was and the experience that I had, and that if we put it all together, me and her, we can make something happen. And she said yes. So I went on to develop the idea with her, and we officially became a business in September. We became an LLC, and we have three clients now. We started doing a team culture and leadership evaluation for our nonprofit tech organization. I just wrapped up yesterday. And we're now doing workshops. We're doing like resume building and storytelling workshops. And most of I thought our clients were going to be like tech, right? They're nonprofits. I was like, I love you guys, because there are a lot of nonprofit tech organizations.
Yes.
So it's just been wonderful. And we're just getting started. You know, it's only been a few months, but that's how our story got developed.
And that is most inspiring. Now, you saw an opportunity. When it was uncomfortable to give all this rejection, but you had an idea. Like, okay, there is a pile of talent here and a lot of underrepresented people here. So not everyone is going to do something about it. Is there something specific that said, you know what, I can do this. I can start something on my own, whether it is a nonprofit or a business. And for a lot of us to make that step, it's a paradigm shift. It's something so different from what we're used to that it is really hard to make that decision. Was there something specific, or was the accumulation of all those ideas and years of experience that told you, okay, let's do this?
You know, yeah, there was a thing that happened. I interviewed for a full-time role at Google, and I had 13 interviews and I didn't get the job. And after that, I was like, look, I can either complain about how things are. I can complain about how hard it is for some people. I can complain about the lack of diversity in tech and in the workforce and in corporate environments, or I can do something about it. And I'm at the point where I'm like, I refuse to complain about anything that I'm not going to do anything about. I'm just like, look, if I'm not going to do anything, I'm not going to bring it up. That's where I'm at, because I think that before I did anything about it, I used to complain a lot about it. I used to victimize myself in the situation. I used to be like, oh my God, it's because I'm a woman of color, because I'm Mexican, because I don't have a college degree. That's why I didn't get the promotion. That's why I didn't get the full-time role. That's why life is harder for me. Or I can just be like, it, you know, like I need to create my own thing, because like my thing doesn't exist out there. And that's what happened. I was like, I was heartbroken. I was like, oh man, the system is rigged. It's broken. And I victimized myself so much sometimes when things are hard, but I had to let that go. I was like, I'm not going to be happy if I keep complaining. Like, what is going to make me happy? And it, for me, it was exploring my own avenue.
Absolutely. So, wow. your own path, your own avenue. We need to discover this from ourselves. That's admirable, Alejandra. Well, now I'm shocked myself to see that your original target was tech, but actually a lot of nonprofits are coming to you. So tell me a little bit about your programs, please. And who are designed for, or how you customize them?
You know, everything that I thought this business was going to be, it's not. you know, we just started in September, and I had this whole vision of like, oh, we're going to be recruiters, and we're going to recruit people, and we're going to work with tech companies. And the most fulfilling work for me has been with nonprofits. I mean, they just care differently about their work. They care differently about their organization and their people. And the work is being tailored to my client. You know, it's like, it's whatever my client needs. Like, for example, the first group that we did, half of them work in tech, the other half don't, but we did resume and storytelling, like interview prep. But then for another organization, we did a team culture and leadership evaluation, where we evaluate the leadership and where the team stands right now, and identified opportunities for them to expand and grow, especially in the areas of people. And again, it's a nonprofit. So I don't know, like, I want to tell you about my programs, but then I'm going to tell you, Gonzalo, and then tomorrow is going to be something different.
Okay. Well, isn't that wonderful that each organization, just like each person, each team is different, am I right? And you have that ability to customize programs according to whatever is needed at the moment.
It's necessary. I'm like, who's going to pay for our stuff? And then you do what they need, right? Because I'm like, am I gonna take the hit for all the legal fees of my business? Or am I going to make it work? You know, I already had choices to make. It's only been a few months, but I was like, we got to hustle. Like, we need to branch out. If we need to do one-on-one consultations for resumes, now we're doing that. And I didn't expect to do that part. I didn't want to charge people, but I was like, oh man, we're a business. I forgot. So, you know, so like, I'm learning and we're both learning as we go. And I think that it's turning into something different. Can I tell you what I see in the future, maybe like a vision?
Absolutely, please.
You know, who knows what's going to happen, right? But right now in my head, I see Puente Tech as being a company that really partners with people in the areas of people. You know, whatever it is, like another organization needs help with building HR department, which we're going to work with them, you know? So it's like whatever related to people is what we will do. But the main thing for us is that people are set up for success, that underrepresented groups, which are Black, Latinx, and women, are set up for success, that they're not only getting a good job, maybe in tech, maybe not, but that they're set up for long-term advancement. They're set up for the economic advancement of their families, to establish generational wealth, to be able to buy property, to be able to live nice, you know, to break generational cycles. That's what I see Puente Tech on the bigger, bigger scale. And as of right now, you know, we'll take it one resume at a time, but that's what it is.
And I commend you for it. I think that I've been recently thinking about our people, you know, and the word promise comes to mind. You know, I think that we have the promise of better lives for our brothers and sisters. You know, we have the commitment of making that possible. Not everyone takes that commitment to heart. So thank you, Alejandra, for doing that, for being one of the fighters and the people that who are making a difference for our people and for other people who need help as well. So muchísimas gracias.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Mi gente, that was Alejandra Ayala. If you want to get in touch with her organization,
it's puentetechjobs.com.
PuenteTechJobs.com. Check it out. Thank you. This was Inno Latino.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Among the different lessons I grasped today were the fact that you can work in your dreams even if you think you have no dreams. even if you don't know what they are. Along with that, I learned about the importance of intuition and tenacity. I also was reminded of the importance of networks and focusing on learning from the best minds in a particular subject. If you're listening on Anchor, leave me a message and let me know what you liked or didn't like about this episode. This is Gonzalo Alberto Peña in Igno Latino. Nos vemos.